This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, July 18th, 2013. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, Catullus Amongst Us. Catullus, the great classical Roman poet, was fabulously rich. He owned his own yacht. His friends and enemies were the movers and shakers of Rome. And he reveled in the decadence of the late Roman Republic. Certainly not the profile of most contemporary American poets, yet he is thought to be among the greatest lyric poets ever by a good number of those contemporary American poets. You can hear echoes of Catullus all over our literature, and I'll give you some examples of that in a moment. Hannah Gamble is a poet and the author of Your Invitation to a Modest Breakfast. She joins me from the Poetry Foundation in Chicago. Hannah, you channel Catullus in a poem that we're going to hear you read later in the program, so I wanted to start out by asking you, when did you first read Catullus, and what did you think?
I first read Catullus, I think it was my second year of grad school. One of the PhD students at the University of Houston, where I was getting my MFA, he was so delighted by Catullus. I think the thing that my friend had used to sort of sell Catullus to me was just the funniness and the bawdiness. And he was talking about one poem where Catullus is telling his enemies to shove fish up their asses or something. And I thought, well, that's fun.
You don't hear that in a lot of contemporary poems.
No, not a lot. I like it when someone just owns their feelings, you know? Mm. And Catullus really put himself out there in terms of when he was in love, he was like wretchedly in love. And when he was angry, he just was completely uncivilized. And so I was expecting a fun romp. But when I read so much of his work, there was a lot of self-loathing that I wasn't expecting to find. Mm. And that actually made me like him even more because it seemed a lot more fair. If people are going to hate on others, it's good if they hate themselves too, I think. Mm. I mean, just sort of like how South Park makes fun of everybody. I respect that, you know?
So one contemporary poet who deliberately echoes Catullus in at least some of her poems is Bernadette Mayer. Bernadette Mayer was born in New York City in 1945, and she's associated with the second generation of New York School poets. Can you tell us a little bit more about her?
I came to know Bernadette Mayer because she picked my book for the National Poetry Series in 2011. I actually didn't know her work before that, and it is a damn shame. I can't believe I got through 3 years of grad school with no one telling me about Bernadette Mayer. Mm-hmm. I mean, she just wasn't on my radar at all. And when I won the National Poetry Series, I immediately Googled Bernadette Mayer. And then I was like, holy cow, she is a big deal. And
she
really is. And I read a lot of her poems that were on the Poetry Foundation website. And I was like, wow, wow, wow. I love these so much.
Yeah, a lot of people do. And once they discover her, she becomes a talisman. You're going to read her poem, The Way to Keep Going in Antarctica. It's a poem about the way to keep going in Antarctica, but not in the literal Antarctica, but in some kind of metaphorical Antarctica. Is there anything you want to add before you read it?
Not before I read it.
All right.
Maybe we can talk afterward.
That's great. Go ahead and give it a read. This is The Way to Keep Going in Antarctica by Bernadette Mayer.
Be strong, Bernadette. Nobody will ever know. I came here for a reason. Perhaps there is a life here of not being afraid of your own heart beating. Do not be afraid of your own heart beating. Look at very small things with your eyes and stay warm. Nothing outside can cure you, but everything's outside. There is great shame for the world in knowing you may have gone this far. Perhaps this is why you love the presence of other people so much. Perhaps this is why you wait so impatiently. You have nothing more to teach. Until there is no more panic at the knowledge of your own real existence, and then only special childish laughter to be shown, and no more lies, no more not to find you, no more coming back and more returning, southern journey, small things, and not my own debris, something to fight against. And we are all very fluent about ourselves, our own ideas of food, a wild sauce. There's not much point in its being over, but we do not speak them. I had written, the man who sewed his soles back on his feet. And then I panicked most at the sound of what the wind could do to me. If I crawled back to the house, 2 feet, give no position, if the branches cracked over my head and they're threatening me, if I covered my face with beer and sweated till you returned, if I suffered, what else could I do?
That was The Way to Keep Going in America by Bernadette Mayer. Now, the first echo of Catullus here is in the very first line, "Be strong, Bernadette," with the poet addressing herself in the first person. It suggests a certain distance of the speaker from herself.
Yeah, and I'm really interested in that kind of self-talk. I mean, that was definitely a thing that I liked about Catullus, was that he was coaching himself as if coaching another person or berating himself. And I like that sense of distance. I think that being distant from oneself is necessary to have perspective on what you're all about.
And in this case, it works because it immediately draws in the reader, because we, with the poet who's writing the poem, are trying to deal with this Bernadette, who seems to be in something of a crisis. What do you think the crisis here is? What is the dilemma of this poem?
Maybe being afraid of the way you have to deal with your feelings when you're alone. The speaker is lonely, and maybe the speaker is feeling a little bit embarrassed by not knowing how to be, how to live. Yeah, there seems to be a little bit of embarrassment about that.
So she begins the poem addressing herself, and then she refers to you throughout the poem. And the poem, I always took it to be Bernadette, that you she's talking to is Bernadette. But could it be somebody else? Could she be talking to somebody else in this poem?
Well, I honestly never thought the you was anyone but Bernadette until sweated till you returned.
Covered my face with beer and sweated till you returned. If I suffered, what else could I do? That's the way the poem ends. It's hard not to think of it as a poem of loneliness and missing somebody.
Yeah, I've read the poem a few times, and that's just always how it hits me. And I was never tempted to think of the you returning as like the self returning to the selfer, like something like that. I never, ever thought that. I thought very specifically of like a real person.
Yeah. We talked about the way she addresses herself, and whenever anybody does that, it seems like Catullus, actually. Mm-hmm. There's no way around that. Do you sense other aspects of Catullus here?
I just feel like the concerns are very similar. I like that Catullus is really concerned with just people and interaction and love and sex, and he's really concerned with relationship, even if it's in terms of, you know, someone slighted him or gave him the stink eye in the public forum, or I don't know what.
Yeah.
Whatever his enemies did, it probably got a little more violent than the stink eye, but he's concerned with relationship. He's concerned with people. He's not really concerned with impractical aesthetic musings. Those are the things that just make his work feel new. I think kind of the messiness of just being a person, like, I love you. Why don't you love me? And it's just always messy humanness.
Let's hear your poem, "Leisure Hannah Does Not Agree With You," which is written after Catullus, as you say. Is there a specific Catullus poem that you're adapting here, or is it more of a tone of voice that you're adapting?
Well, it's the title and the disgust that runs throughout. There's a line in some Catullus poem that just says, "Leisure, Catullus does not agree with you."
Mm-hmm.
And so I took that, and then, yeah, the disgust with the self and the body and the yearning and the loneliness and the weakness and the vanity, just all the ways that you can feel yourself is disgusting and that the world is disgusting and that everything's wrong.
Okay. We're ready for this poem. Go ahead and give it a read.
Okay, great. "Leisure Hannah does not agree with you. My house disgusted me, so I slept in a tent. My tent disgusted me, so I slept in the grass. The grass disgusted me, so I slept in my body, which I strung like a hammock from 2 ropes. My body disgusted me, so I carved myself out of it. My use of knives disgusted me because it was an act of violence. My weakness disgusted me because Hannah means hammer. The meaning of my name disgusted me because I'd rather be known as beautiful. My vanity disgusted me because I am a scholar. My scholarship disgusted me because knowledge is empty. My emptiness disgusted me because I wanted to be whole. My wholeness would have disgusted me because to be whole is to be smug. Still, I tried to understand wholeness as the inclusiveness of all activities. I walked out into the yard, trying to vomit and drink milk simultaneously. I tried to sleep while smoking a cigar. I have enough regrets to crack all the plumbing. I'm whole only in that I've built my person from every thought I've ever loved.
That was Leisure Hannah Does Not Agree With You. Now, this poem makes me think of someone kind of peeling an onion layer after layer until you finally get to the center of it, and which in this case is that the speaker is made up of every thought I've ever loved. Is that a decent way to read the poem, as a continually peeling back of the self?
Yeah, I think so. I sure didn't know where... I've never written a poem like this before where there's so much repetition and then so much just following one thing to another.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I think that the end of the poem does kind of arrive at, well, at least wanting to feel whole in some way and thinking, well, maybe there's some kind of makeshift wholeness that people can have.
Even though it's a poem filled with disgust from top to bottom, it's a very positive ending in the sense that I've built my person from every thought I've ever loved. That's a very positive way to look at identity.
That is really positive, and I never had thought of it myself, but I'm glad you gave me the occasion to hear. And now I think when I first wrote it, I think that I was thinking more about like, well, that's sad. But I like you reading it positively. I'm cool with that. It's nice to be able to love thoughts and have them be some kind of body that you can travel around in if there's an absence of the other kind of body or self.
Let me get back to the idea of disgust. Do you remember mm-hmm. what provoked the poem? What filled you with disgust that you wanted to explore it more deeply? Just
oh,
out of
God,
curiosity.
I really do. Yeah, sure. Oh, let me tell you all about it.
Okay.
I don't know. I think I had lost a couple friends, not to death, but just to disagreements or something. Mm-hmm. I remember that I was living with, I was renting a room from a woman who was really unpleasant. There were just lots of isolating things. And then on top of it, I was just not pleased with my own performance as a poet or like what kind of things I was achieving. So
so there's a lot of self-disgust in the poem.
There actually really is. Total mm-hmm. self-disgust. Like, I totally remember the exact day that I wrote this poem. Mm. I was on my porch. There was a rat that had come to live behind my refrigerator, and it also would, like, pee in the insulation, like, in between my stove range and oven. Ugh. So my kitchen smelled horrible, and I didn't feel, like, safe in my house because the rat would tear things up. And I was out on, you know, my muggy, sticky porch. And I remember like going to Pizza Hut and Dunkin' Donuts and getting a donut and getting a small pizza. And I'm like gluten intolerant. So it was like it was like a terrible idea, but I like was filled with so much self-hatred and wanted a donut and a pizza. So I bought these things and I sat out on the porch and felt wretched and then I wrote this poem. That's exactly how it happened.
And I bet it paradoxically cheered you up because it's a good poem.
Well, thanks. You know, that's what I don't recall. I don't remember if I felt any better in the moment, but I know that in general, writing makes me feel better, you know, regardless of whether the poem was even any good. So just generally, yeah, I think that's how things work, is I feel a little better after I write.
Hannah, thanks so much.
Thanks.
Hannah Gamble is the author of Your Invitation to a Modest Breakfast, which is published by Fence Books. You can read a few more of her poems and poems by Bernadette Mayer on our website, poetryfoundation.org. If you have any comments on this program, email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.